In brightest day,
in blackest night.
Radio show. Chris Owen, Walter DeRiley.
Excelsior!
Crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and hear the lamentation of your women.
And welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show that champions the local comic book shop. We're broadcasting at 93.3 CFMU McMaster Radio, and we're podcasting at comicbookdaily.com and getthepointradio.com. I am Walter DeRiley, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
And I am Chris Owen, Professor of Comic History at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
And as always, we are your jolly elves.
Slaving away in the sweatshop that is the world of comic books.
Yes. Come on, Santa, get off my back!
I'm drawing as fast as I can!
Jeez. Man, cut me some slack, will you, Claus?
Oh, he's a hard worker.
Yeah, he is. That this time of year up there, it's a zoo.
It's very tough on them. Yeah. Very tough on Santa.
Those elves, I wouldn't want to, those elves, they got it tough.
They really do. Yeah. But you know what? Santa's got a lot of people to look after. So you know what? You know, it's a bad time of the year for those elves. But you know what? After the 25th, it's going to be all smooth sailing.
You're right. Disneyland tickets for all those elves, right?
Let the beer flow.
Hey, Chris, here we are on a Wednesday, a mid-December Wednesday.
Yeah.
The heat is on, isn't it, though?
It really is. You know, funny you should say that because the weather around here has been really nice lately.
Beautiful.
So the heat is sort of on.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But it's that time of year where local comic book shops, we hope, worldwide, are getting nice and busy. People are coming in. They're picking up their new comics this week. But maybe also they're picking up that little something extra for that fanboy
or a little sweetheart or somebody, maybe, you know.
Right. Yeah. Right. So, and as always, being Wednesday, we're going to start the show off with what? We're going to start off with
New This Week.
New This Week.
New
Go
This
ahead.
Week is brought to you by Bespin City Taxidermy. Has your beloved pet gone to the great beyond? Then why not immortalize them in frozen carbonite? Now accepting pets of all sizes from womp rats to rancors. Your friends can live on forever.
But yes.
Did you like that? Yeah.
Yes, I did. Yeah. So I guess that would be a reference to what?
there's this little series of movies called the Star Wars movies.
Right. Okay.
Star Wars.
I put that together when it said carbonite.
Kryptonite. Yeah.
And that's where they put the Han Solo guy in,
Not Han Solo, but the Han Solo.
Right,
that's right.
That's where they froze him.
That's right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. I knew it. You know what? I knew it, but I wasn't sure.
You know, I'm impressed by your, knowledge of
breadth
the star.
Of knowledge.
Yeah, breadth of knowledge. Yes.
All right, Chris. Well, let's start with new this week.
Yes.
Of course, these are comic books that are heading into your local shop.
Well, the first one we should have talked about last week. It was a new this week from last week, but I thought we didn't talk about it, so I thought we really should talk about it very briefly here. And it's The Defenders. And, here's a long standing title from the Marvel Universe. They're bringing it back again. And the reason why I felt we had to talk about it is it's got. The writer is Matt Fraction, mm-hmm. and it's got the Terry Dodson and Rachel Dodson are the artists and inkers. You know, it's a really great looking book. It's got all your favorite characters from the old Defenders. It's got Silver Surfer, Doctor Strange, the Incredible Hulk. You know, the list goes on. It just looks like a great book. It looks like it harkens back to the old days from the old 70s comics, even with a new kind of flair. And I thought it looked great.
You know what? And Avengers, right? They're Marvel's the big team.
That's right.
And Marvel has got so many great characters.
Yes.
There's room for another great team.
Absolutely.
Right? And Defenders, remember, here's a trivia question.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
How many issues did that first Defenders run last?
Ooh, that's a good question.
152.
Oh, I was going to answer that, but I was going to say 108, but, you know, you didn't give me the chance. But that's
Fair enough. But it was a super popular thing, and it lasted a long time. Over a decade.
And even back then, they had sort of one of the first crossovers in comics, right? Because there was an Avengers-Defenders crossover.
Avengers-Defenders crossover, right. Absolutely right. And you're right, though. Silver Surfer, Hulk, Strange, Namor, great group. I hope, with Matt Fraction, he's great.
He's great, okay. And you know what? Terry Dodson and Rachel Dodson are a great team as well. I love their artwork, absolutely love it, and I'm looking forward to reading it.
Defenders number one at your local comic book shop. Okay, yes. What else we got, Chris?
Well, if we're going to talk about Defenders, we might as well talk about Avengers.
Hey, can't have one without the other.
Well, you really can. It's two peas in a pod, really. And so we got the Avengers Sanction. And this is it's a new little miniseries by Jeff Loeb and Ed McGuinness. Now, those two guys have been been collaborating on comics for a long time now. They're doing they did Deadpool. They did the Superman-Batman series. You know, these guys have been around for a while, and this is going to be no different. So I managed to read a few pages of it, and it just looks – it harkens back to, again, those old days, team up of the Avengers. All of a sudden, somehow Cable is now in it, and Cable comes back, and there's like a little bit of, you know, some dream sequences and stuff like that. We're not too sure if he's actually there or not, you know. Anyways, it looks awesome.
Right. Fair enough. Stick people are a challenge for me.
Right. Right.
But I'm not a big fan of the cover art.
You know what? Ed McGuinness, a lot of people don't like his artwork because they say that his style is too balloony.
Right.
He draws muscles as if they're all kind of balloons.
I thought this was Liefeld when I first saw
it. Oh, ouch. That's almost like fighting words.
Sacrilege.
Yeah,
I know.
Sacrilege. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Anyways, go check that out on your local stands today.
Right, okay, what else we got? Chris, you've picked from DC today Batman and Robin number 4 hitting the stands at the local comic shops.
Yeah.
Why this one?
Well, I chose this one today because, I gave it a quick read-through, and I liked the way the story was going. All of a sudden, they've got in the opening couple of pages, we've got Batman.
No spoilers, Chris.
Oh,
no spoilers,
okay,
please.
Well.
No spoilers. It's a good book.
It's
you like it.
There's an abandoned drive-in. And I will say that somebody is tied up. And
listen, I started many a joke with those same figures. So anyways, I was in an abandoned drive-in.
I don't want to say too much
there
about
I was.
It, but I thought it was a neat take on the relationship between Batman and Robin and people that are trying to sort of get involved in that relationship.
Right. You know, that's awfully controversial right there. You know, the whole Batman and Robin relationship is a controversial relationship.
It really is. Yeah. All the way back from...
all the way back to the 40s.
That's 40s. Right. And then, of course, Frederick Wortham talked about that.
Absolutely.
In Seduction
and
of
you know what? We'll leave it there, all right?
Just
family
saying.
Family show.
Just saying.
All right, so...
Kids pick of the week.
Kids pick of the week. We have what?
SpongeBob Comics, number 6.
Absolutely.
I thought we would choose that one rather just because, you know what? It's kind of a little bit of a play on the cover says Crisis of Infinite Jerks.
Yes.
And, of course, that's a play on Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yes.
And so it's just a bit of a play on comics. And just to say, you know, all the different kind of SpongeBobs that are on the comic cover there. It's kind of a neat cover. And, of course, SpongeBob is still popular today.
What do you mean still? It was always was, never, never.
Well, I'm just saying.
In our household, Chris,
you still watch it.
We have three ultra hardcore SpongeBob fans.
Oh, wow.
My 10-year-old, my 12-year-old, and me.
Oh, I didn't. Yes. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to step on any toes.
Though, here. I have to admit, I'm more of a Patrick fan. Love the guy. Patrick
you
is
like
absolutely.
You like the starfish, do you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know what, though? Great writing, great comedy, and it's great to see that the SpongeBob franchise has jumped over from the cartoons into the comic book format and is doing well, showing that the crossovers can come the other way too.
Absolutely.
SpongeBob SquarePants at your local comic book shop today.
All righty. Well, that is it for our new this week. And you know what? Unfortunately, you know, Walt, he caught me with my proverbial
shorts down
here kind of thing. I'm supposed to have some music ready for him, but I don't have anything ready yet. So let's just see if we can get something going here very quickly. Here we go. Space Ghost. serious. You remember he had a.
I hated that show. I remember it was on. I absolutely hated that.
You know, it's probably a little bit. You were probably a little bit too old for it.
Or was it was too advanced for me.
That too. Yeah, because right. I loved it. I loved it.
Okay,
you know. But you know what? It's time for our semi new feature this week, which is Comic Culture Mailbag.
Go ahead.
And Comic Culture Mailbag is brought to you by the number one issues. Yeah, you know, we know you hate us, but you're going to buy us anyways.
Always works better when you read it correctly, Chris.
Hey, always. Man, it's, you know, okay. Do you want me to read it the way it was actually written?
No.
Okay, forget it.
So the mailbag that came in this week,
yes.
An email from a guy named Neil in North Vancouver, BC.
Oh, what's Neil got to say?
And Neil says, hey, guys, I want to get my girlfriend into comics. I figure if she gets into comics, she won't bug me so much for me being in.
Well, that's a good point. It's a very good point.
How do I get her hooked?
Well, you know, the thing.
I don't know.
I'm going to give you my semi-professional opinion on this.
All right, go ahead.
First of all, first thing you want to do is get her into the store. That is probably the biggest leap you can possibly make.
Yeah. Scout the store out first. Yes. Hello. Scout the store out first. Make sure it's one of those good stores.
Family-friendly kind of stores.
Family-friendly, progressive,
not
well-lit.
Not ones that is like, you know, nothing but you know, guys all over the place leering at her or something like that, because that can kind of put her off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing is get her interested in perhaps not your ordinary kind of you know, not necessarily just the everyday kind of comics. Maybe
like Thor or Spider-Man or something.
You know, give her something to maybe that is a little bit different. Like maybe like, you know, Sock Monkey or, I don't know, maybe something like, like Walking Dead or something like that. Something, mm-hmm. something where there's strong characterization in the comic books.
Right.
Something where there's relationships involved. I know a lot of girls that I've talked to in the past like a lot of the X-Men comics because there's always relationships going on and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
People, you know, I found that girls like characters a little more well-rounded. That, you know,
fair enough.
So,
you know, I get my take on this is, you know, Neil, the hell are you doing, buddy? You know, you love don't get her involved. That would be my advice.
Well, you know,
hey, he's got to have his own little thing.
Hey, absolutely. But yeah. why can they not read comics together? But apart.
No, I guess they could. My point though is, right now she's not into him. He is. He wants to get her.
I'm
thinking, no, maybe you need your own thing.
But that's a very good point. And right. if she's not going to be interested in it on her own free will, then maybe she won't want to do it in general, right?
Yeah.
You know.
But,
so
I guess what you're saying though is, don't get her into the traditional tight things.
Yeah, you know.
Because that came out wrong.
Well, some people like those kind of things. Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Chris, let's move it along.
All right.
I guess we're going to go right into industry news.
Yes.
Aren't we?
And let me try my second hand, my third hand at this here. Industry news is brought to you by your local comic book shop. Get your shopping done early and have a sweet Christmas.
That was a safe read.
Really was. Excellent. Really was. All right.
All right, Chris, we're going to start our industry news with a topic. I read this on the net, and I was kind of intrigued and disgusted both at the same time. So Amazon, of course, is the
Internet giant
that sells everything.
Yes, right? Yes.
So they have a thing. Amazon is offering – so if you're a customer –
okay.
And you go into a comic book shop.
Right.
Or any shop, by that matter.
Wait, hold on. If you're a customer of Amazon
a customer of the comic book shop.
Okay, yeah.
So you go into the comic book shop, and you take an item.
Right.
And you scan it with your iPhone.
Like a comic book.
Like a comic book or a graphic novel.
Okay.
Or something like that. And you scan it with your iPhone through the Amazon Price Checks app.
Okay, right.
So you're in that shop, and you quickly scan it with that app.
Yeah.
And you end up buying that product from Amazon.
Right. So hold on.
Amazon will give you a 5% discount.
Hold on a second there. So you're telling me that if you're – so let's say I'm interested in buying a Batman graphic novel.
Yes.
So I decide that I'm going to go to the local comic book store, find the Batman graphic novel I want,
yes,
scan it with the Amazon app on my smartphone.
Yes.
And then if I buy it through Amazon, through that app.
When you get home, you put the order in online, or maybe even on your flipping iPhone
probably,
at that moment.
Probably.
Right?
It could be out through that moment.
Yeah.
Then they're going to give me a 5% discount.
An extra 5% discount off their already lower price than the comic shop.
I think it's up to $5.
Up to $5.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow, that's dirty pool.
Isn't that dirty pool?
Yeah,
though?
That's dirty pool. Like,
isn't
that's,
that?
Because you know what? Amazon is taking advantage of the fact that people can go into brick and mortar stores and browse.
Right.
Which is, you know, hey, that's part of what you're paying for.
Mm-hmm.
You're paying for that opportunity to look around, like see what you like. And then they're basically stealing the customer away by giving them an additional 5%.
Those sneaky little buggers.
Yeah, that's dirty pool. I don't like that at all.
Neither do I. Now, first of all, Amazon has a pricing advantage to brick and mortar shops, right?
Sure.
So you go into any brick and mortar shop and you pick up that item. Well, those guys, they got all that payroll, they got all that overhead, they got the rent, they got to support that brick and mortar shop, right?
Yeah.
They're full of, but they also have the stock on the shelves.
Right, absolutely, that's right.
So if you go into a good shop and they've got thousands of graphic novels there for you to roam through, you can spend a pleasant, couple hours going through this
for
stuff.
Sure.
Oh, this is cool, that's cool, because you're not going to see that at the big box Barnes & Nobles or Chapters.
No.
You're just going to see 20 or 30 of the new ones, right?
That's right.
So these brick-and-mortar guys are I guess, having to charge you a bit of a discount, maybe 10% off the cover or something like that, because they have all this overhead.
Right, right.
Whereas Amazon just basically...
They just drop ships things. And,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they basically sell them before they even buy them, from what I understand.
Right, yeah.
Right. So they...
I think they keep some stock on stuff, but not much.
Right. So the guy going in, he's enjoying or she's enjoying all that selection.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And they're browsing. And for Amazon to say, go in there and browse, but we know you'll probably be enticed to buy at that moment because it's in hand and you really want it.
Yeah.
But we're going to try to dissuade you from that by even offering 5% more.
But you're right. But here's the thing that I'm going to warn our listeners about is that chances are they're going to have... chances are that if they're, let's say they're going to buy a graphic novel, and Amazon has a certain price point where they have free shipping, but that price point is in roughly around $40. So they're going to have to spend at least $40 to get that free shipping. Otherwise, they're going to pay for shipping, which I can guarantee you is probably going to be more than that 5%.
Right.
Right. Right. So let's not forget also that
and more than probably the savings that they're the couple bucks savings that they're if they bought it off the comic shop versus the Amazon. Right.
And they're going to have to wait at least a day to get it.
Right. Or what do you mean a day? Come on.
Well,
a week.
A week, probably.
Right.
Yeah. So let's not for I don't think it's right. I think it's bad business. And I guess there's nothing really that a store can do to prevent people from scanning these things, right?
It's not. But here's the psychology of the shopper, perhaps, right? Here's the psychology of the shopper. So there is that strain of shoppers that is always going to go to the lowest price.
Right. Right?
But there is also – Amazon runs a PR danger here of looking – bad.
Yes.
In a sense that, in a sense that there may be that marginal shopper that shops at Amazon because Amazon is a great place to shop, right?
Yeah.
But there may be that person and a large swath of people that say, hey, guys, come on, would you, this is, what are you doing?
Yes.
That kind of thing.
Yes,
where they may go, you know what, for that extra 37 cents that I'm going to whatever on this, screw you guys. I would have bought it off you anyway, but I'll buy it here because this isn't.
That's not right.
It doesn't come off right.
No.
I guess
is
my point. Right?
It seems to be ethically unsound.
Yeah.
Somehow. I don't know how, but somehow.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right.
But anyway, so that's so please put your iPhones away at your local comic book shop. And peruse if you enjoy it, like it. If you can wait, order it off of Amazon.
If you
All right. Let's move along. Oh. Chris, this was a whole poop storm on the internet.
This was hilarious.
This was J. Michael Straczynski.
Yes.
He's, of course, he wrote a million things.
Right.
Right?
I mean, his first big thing was Rising Stars. Yes. He sort of came off because he was one of the writers and, I guess, creators somewhere of Babylon 5.
Yes.
He came off of the TV series, and then he ended up writing comics, and Rising Stars was one of his big things.
Mm-hmm.
And then, eventually he works on a bunch of things, and he did also work on Amazing Spider-Man as well.
Yeah, he did Amazing Spider-Man around the Civil War era.
Right, right.
He did good work on Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah. It was solid, yeah.
So on his tweet or whatever, Facebook. I think it was on his Facebook. There's a graph showing, the declining sales in Amazing Spider-Man over the last couple of years.
Right.
So anyway, on his Facebook thing, he does a kind of doofusy thing and he says, "Hey, guys, sales on Amazing Spider-Man since my departure. Just saying.
Yeah, just saying.
Yeah.
And then current editor of Spider-Man replied.
Steve Wanker.
Steve Wacker.
I'm sorry. Steve Wacker.
You're not. Oh boy.
Okay. Steve Wacker. Sorry, I misread it.
Apologies from comic culture right away from both Chris and Walt.
Right.
Steve Wacker. Current editor of Spider-Man replies, an excellent post, JMS, out of context, out of date, and full out of the blue mean.
Yes.
Absolutely, yes.
So he's basically saying, you know, classy move guy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which he calls him out, right?
He basically calls him out on what are you doing?
What are you doing?
That's right.
Well, which is fine.
Yep.
But J. Michael comes back and says, oh, what are you getting mad at me for? I've only put down facts.
Right.
I've never dissed the new creative teams.
Right.
And in which case, you know, Wacker comes back and says, you didn't just put out facts, you doofus. You put just saying at the end.
Like, yeah.
There's only one way to interpret what
Absolutely.
You just said.
That's right.
And that's an egotistical, whatever.
That's right.
And then you get other guys chiming
Dan Slott, who's one of the writers currently of Spider-Man,
yeah.
He says, hugs for everyone, hugs.
So Dan just wants to, the current writer, Spidey, just wants to diffuse the whole situation.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? But then Mark Waid, who's also a famous writer,
yeah.
He didn't pull any punches.
No, he just wrote less hugs.
Yeah.
And then he wrote a little bit more about that afterwards.
He says, dick move, Joe, flat out dick move.
Yeah.
And so this was kind of a, I don't know, I guess the whole internet community got excited about this.
Oh, yeah,
fight,
this went on
right?
and on.
This,
yeah.
This was posted on Bleeding Cool, by the way. Bleeding Cool, great website, so we have to give kudos to them
for
posting it. But then our website, comicbookdaily.com, our producer, Anthony Falcone, chimed in
yes.
with his article titled, Is J. Michael Straczynski a Big Fat Jerk?
Yes, and right. then he went on to talk a little bit about his points and factors about writing the sales and high sales are not necessarily a causal relationship, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And what Anthony is saying, and he's right, is comics in general over the last three years have been dropping.
Yes.
J. Michael had the benefit of being in around that Civil War era.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Which was peaking.
Which was
for
huge
Marvel,
for right? Marvel, anyways, and comics. And
then what I like is Anthony comes out because Anthony is a huge purebred Spidey.
Yes,
fan,
yes.
Right, and he's read everything.
Yeah.
And Anthony's saying that Straczynski can't write worth crap.
Well, yeah,
Spidey
and,
anyway.
And this is great because he talks about he likes Dan Slott, who's actually one of my favorite writers,
uh-huh.
and he says how Dan Slott gets the character of Spider-Man, and then he goes on to say how he thought that Straczynski wrecked Thor, wrecked Wonder Woman, wrecked Superman, and he said that his version of Walking Across America was basically a ripoff of the Hard Traveling Heroes with Green Lantern and Green Arrow.
Yep. Denny O'Neill, Neil Adams.
That's right. Yeah. So basically, he's basically saying that that this guy came into comics at a good time. He happened to write a few things that happened to be around the right time. He's not necessarily a good writer,
right.
but he just got lucky.
You know what, though? It's kind of good for the hobby in a sense. People are rallying around Basically, they're it's like the bully on the playground.
Right.
And everybody else is kind of just stepping up.
Absolutely.
Standing
yep.
up to him and
yep.
challenging
that's right.
him saying,
yep.
hey, you are wrong, buddy.
Yep, that's
you know,
right.
Back off, pal. Back
Get your own
off.
Sandwich.
Yeah.
Back off. Get your own sandwich.
Back off. Now, got me to thinking, though. You've read a lot of Spidey back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah, actually I have. Yep.
Okay. So, according to Falcone,
yes.
Straczynski can't write Spidey worth a crap.
Right.
I personally like the Spider Island stuff. I read at least the first five.
That's by Dan Slott.
Yeah, Dan
yes,
Slott.
Yes.
I really like this.
Well,
a lot of fun.
Dan Slott's a great writer, but
right.
you know what? There are a few really great Spider-Man writers out
Spider-Man
there.
Spider-Man has been written since 1962.
Yeah.
Okay, so you kind of are the Spidey okay. expert.
So,
in this
well,
room, anyway,
in
the, you're the Spidey expert.
As far as this table goes, yes. As far as, you know
Who
what?
Who can write a Spidey tale?
You know what? First of all, Stan Lee.
Yeah, fair enough.
The guy created Spider-Man.
Hey, Spider-Man.
And
hey, Spidey
he wrote
man.
The first 100 issues. You know, he got the character. He understood the character. And all those early issues were fantastic.
You're right. You know what? He did write those early iconic
yeah.
issues, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
The
yeah.
first Green Goblin, the
yep.
first Kingpin.
First Doc Ock.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Mysterio.
Man,
all
right?
those great
yeah.
iconic characters.
First Lizard, the
yeah.
first, yeah, you're
yeah.
right. First Rhino.
Yeah, that's right.
First Stan Lee.
Yeah, that's right.
First Mary Jane Watson.
Kingpin, too.
Kingpin,
Kingpin
number 50,
yeah,
right?
Number 50, yeah.
Yep.
So, wow. Yeah, you know, so
and
really.
And Stan, my kudos to Stan for me was when he wrote those drug use stories in early 1971,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, number, is it 67 or 68?
Yeah, no, 96 to 98.
96, sorry.
Where the Comics Code Authority.
Where they dropped the Comics Code.
Yeah, they wouldn't approve the stories because they were about, they were anti-drug use.
Yes.
But it was a controversial topic for the time.
Right.
And Stan went ahead and published them.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is, you know, hey, was a great
absolutely,
moment.
Absolutely, absolutely, I agree.
Okay, who else?
David Michelin. I know, you know, David Michelin is not a name that most people think of when they think of Spider-Man writers.
I think of tires right away, Chris. Sorry.
But you know what? Here's a guy that co-created Venom.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
He did some great stories with Todd McFarlane, with Eric Larson, with Mark Bagley. Mm-hmm. Excellent Sinister Six storyline. You know,
say that twice.
really, great writer. Roger Stern, who created Hobgoblin, and he did the whole Gang War storyline.
You know what? I remember the Gang War. That was in the late
phenomenal.
200s. Yeah, Gang War. Yeah. 280s.
Yes, yeah. Yes, that's right. Yes, yeah. 280s, yep. And Dan Slott, we've already talked about him. And I would also say Paul Jenkins. Paul Jenkins was probably also pretty underrated here. He's a great, you know, Paul Jenkins, I know for a lot of people is hit and miss.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he gets Spider-Man. I think he gets the character. And you did some great work on Spider-Man.
All right. So, okay. So, if anybody's heading into a local shop and perusing the Spider-Man graphic novels.
Yes, absolutely.
Look for ones authored by Stan Lee.
Yep.
Roger Stern, Dan Slott, Paul Jenkins, and David Michelin.
Okay. So, I know we're sort of getting a little long in the tooth on this topic.
Tooth.
But if I had to ask you what your favorite Spider-Man storyline was, can you think of one off the top of your head?
Favorite Spider-Man storyline. You know what? I like the drug issues. Like,
yep.
That's going
yep.
way back. And
yeah,
I've
that's
read
okay.
them.
Well,
I didn't read them when they originally came out. I was just a little too young.
Right,
and stuff
right,
like
right.
That. I went back. But I kind of, for me, Spider-Man is, when I read Spider-Man, there's a lot of nostalgia in Spider-Man. That time period, too, the kind of cultural revolution that was happening, late 60s, early 70s.
Right.
The, you know, the women's lib, black power,
yep,
anti-war, drug kind of thing. I really kind of like that era of Spidey. I like the drug issues.
That's so awesome. That's good. Yeah. That's good.
All right.
My favorite was the I always get the title wrong, but I'll call it Kraven's Final Hunt.
That was a great story. I read that too. That was a great story.
Yeah. That's probably my favorite.
That was a great story. Sure. That crossed over into three titles.
Three different titles.
Great story.
Yeah. Yeah. With Mike Zeck doing the artwork and, yeah.
Excellent,
awesome
Chris.
Stuff.
All right. Hey, oh, Chris, so I'm on the net, and I'm trying to come up with some stuff for the show, and I see, whoa, big news, Chris. This is big news. Are
big
you ready?
News. Big news. Yes.
There is a poster out for the Bane, The Dark Knight Returns.
Whoa, Dark Knight Rises.
Sorry.
But whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
So
on the internet, so some internet.
Holy schmoly.
Yeah, some internet news site.
Yes.
Figured it was big news that a new poster was
Well, not only is there a new poster for Bane in being in, you know, Dark Knight Rises, but are you ready for this?
No.
There's a new poster for Amazing Spider-Man.
Get
too.
Out!
Dun, dun, dun!
Wow.
I know, it's pretty amazing stuff.
I see it actually here. It's actually got the lights casting a shadow of a spider.
I know.
When it's reflecting on Peter Parker.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
Don't you think that really the whole this is I got to say that the idea of the posters making it as big news is kind of lame.
It is.
It really is kind of lame.
It's like a slow news day type of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
But you know what?
We need a comic culture poster.
We do. Yeah. We do. Yes.
Where the lights shining, you know, in behind us.
And it's creating big comic culture logos or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
All right. You know what? We didn't talk about this last week.
Yes.
Unfortunately, sad news. Sad news. The comics community lost another golden age great artist with the passing of Jerry Robinson on December the 7th. Of this year,
uh-huh.
He died at age 89. Now, of course, if you're not aware of who Jerry Robinson is,
he's a true builder.
He's a true original, right? Original, yeah. He is this guy that he now, although all credit always goes to Bob Kane for all the characterizations and characters in the Batman comics.
Right.
There is an underlying role of by Jerry Robinson that he actually helped create the Joker and Robin characters.
Now, I was reading that, too. So a bit of a controversy there.
Yeah.
Everybody, like, not everybody, Kane and who was the guy? Was it Bill Finger?
Bill Finger, yeah.
Bill Finger.
Well, Bill Finger always wrote and, like, he came up with those concepts. And, and you know, it's always funny that there's sort of an ongoing gag in the comics industry that, you know, whenever you're creating something, you want to make sure you don't get fingered.
Oh.
Right? Because that's, like, you know, because Bill Finger.
Right. Yeah, I hear you.
He always gets.
Well, listen, we don't know. It's one of those things, though, where just like Stan Lee.
Yeah.
And everybody loves Stan Lee. Don't get me wrong.
I love
Stan Lee.
Yeah.
Now, the thing, though, is as time moves on and as kind of generations that weren't involved at that moment, they kind of look back on things almost historically.
Right.
Kind of, with Stan, and I'm sure with Finger and Kane and Jerry Robinson, I'm sure Jerry Robinson was definitely involved with the creation of the Joker.
Right.
He obviously drew beautifully for the time in those comics.
Yes.
But it's like, you know, now we're giving Stan all these accolades, like Stan created the Marvel Universe. He didn't. You know, Steve Ditko and Jack Kirby and those guys all had just as much, if not more, contribution.
Yep.
But
yep.
as history goes on, you have to kind of give one guy kind of that, you know, that's the guy, right?
Yep.
And I think Bob Kane, in a way, maybe he's getting that benefit too.
And
guys like Jerry Robinson are falling by the wayside because of that.
The only difference there I'll say about that is because I've read a bunch of autobiographies and I've read a lot of history about this. And Bob Kane, when he created the character, he had an ironclad agreement with DC that went on that legally nobody actually ever found out what the agreements were. But that's why only his name ever appeared in the comics at the bottom of Batman created by Bob Kane.
Right.
So he had that was a legal agreement that he made with DC at the time. I can't remember the guy who was actually in charge at the time. But I take a bit of an issue with that when clearly there's other people involved. Involved, but only he ever got credit.
Fair enough.
But anyways, let's go to a musical interlude here, and I've got a bit of the old Josie and the Pussycats.
I didn't realize I had to cut in there.
That's all right.
All right, Chris. You know, that's a good song. Not one of my favorites, but it's a good song.
I'm glad you like it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
Josie and the Pussycats. That's the Archie world?
That's right. Yeah,
that's
right.
The Archie
created by Dan DiCarlo.
Dan DiCarlo.
Yeah.
Right, okay. One of the seminal Archie artists.
Absolutely, that's right. Yes. So, listen, our next segment is brought to you by your local comic book shop, 52 comics a year only at your local comic book shop.
I believe the
52 Christmases a year.
Woo!
52 Christmases a year.
All right, pour that man another drink.
Yeah, I wish I had one.
All right.
Listen, hey, before we keep going here, I got bit of a fun topic here for you.
You do?
I do. And this was taken from comic. Camera, where is it? Hold on.
Comic Vine.
I got it written down over here. Comic Vine. And this was the most published comic book characters. Now, so how many times has a particular comic book character appeared in comics?
So hold on. You have a list of how many times a character has appeared in a comic book.
That's right.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, so I've got number 1 through number 25. Now, I'm going to think that you probably know the number of the first few, right? So,
right.
So, like, who would you think the first one? I'm going to ask you who. How
okay,
many...
so hold on quickly. So, yes. Like, if Hulk appeared in, you know, 102 Hulk issues, but he was also, let's say, a guest star in the Defenders,
right.
Or part of the that counts as a thing.
I would think so.
In
yeah.
published comic books.
In published comic books, that's right.
Number one, the most appeared comic book character has to be what? Batman, right?
That's number two.
It's number two?
It's number two, yeah.
Wow, okay, so, number one.
You got to think of the age here. So you're close.
Okay, well, okay. When you said that, you gave it away, right?
Superman. So right. Superman's number one, Batman's number two.
So how would that be? Like, the only reason I'm asking, they started at the same time.
Yeah.
But say over the last 30 years, there's been way more Batman.
I don't know about that, because remember, there was a time period in the 90s when Superman had four different titles going at the same time. Remember, he had Superman,
you're right.
Action Comics, Adventures of Superman, you know, like it was, you know, Superman, the Man of Steel.
Good point. And you know what? In the 50s and 60s, Superman was appearing in things like Superboy, Jimmy Olsen, Lois Lane.
That's right.
Action, Superman
right.
proper. Yeah. Right. You're
exactly.
right. Yeah,
so
okay.
he's had a lot. Okay.
I have a feeling, though, Batman will probably take him.
Well, you know what?
I think Batman could take Superman, guys.
They're very close. Superman is at 8,007 issues,
uh-huh.
And Batman's at 7,994.
Oh, you're talking about like 13 issues apart.
I think this must be like starring, like, you know, the actual character, not just an appearance.
I'm sure it's just an appearance.
It could be just an appearance. Okay.
Wow. Okay. So okay, one and two, Superman, and then Batman.
Right. So who's number three?
Number three. I'll take door number three. Door number three. Number three would be like an old one too, like say like Wonder Woman.
No. Wonder Woman. Now remember, Wonder Woman really has only had her own title. I mean, she appeared in Justice League of America, and
right.
a few other kind of titles, but not nearly the kind of popularity that this.
Can
one.
Give me like a little hint.
A newer character.
Newer.
From
Deadpool.
'60s and on.
Oh, '60s and on. Oh, Spider-Man.
Right. Okay,
oh, so Spider-Man's number three.
Spider-Man's number three. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Now, you know, here's what we're gonna get. We'll do like a couple more here.
Okay, couple more.
Who do you think number four is? This is gonna might surprise you because he's even newer than. Sorry, I gave it away by the gender.
Okay,
there.
I got it.
Okay.
I got it.
Okay.
Because I'm a brainwave.
Okay.
Okay, he's even newer than Spider-Man.
Right.
So, Wolverine.
Yes, Wolverine is number four. Now, number five, you're not going to get.
Number five, I'm not going to get.
But I'm gonna ask you anyways.
Okay. Number five is the X-Men.
No.
That was stupid, right? Because that's not a guy.
That's not even one guy. But, right. but, you know, whatever. That's good.
All right. So, what's number five?
Okay, I'll give you a bit of a hint. It's not a superhero.
Not a superhero.
No.
Oh, Archie.
Oh, good call, but no.
Right.
Good.
Richie
guess.
Rich.
No. Oh, I wish. He's one of my favorites.
All right.
Donald Duck.
Oh,
Donald Duck. Donald Duck has appeared. He first appeared in Adventures of Mickey Mouse number one, and he has appeared in 6,693
Holy
different issues.
Holy crap. But you know what? Probably in the last 20 years, he's appeared in like 11 issues.
I don't know. Well, there's always been some sort of Donald Duck adventures or something going on.
Fair enough.
Okay, so now... The next, again, one more. One
okay,
more.
One more.
Now, six to eight.
Six to eight.
They're all sort of the same thing.
They're all sort of the same thing.
Yeah.
They're all sort
they're
of,
all
the,
sort
same
of the same
thing. The Three Stooges.
No, but close.
Close. Well, what does that mean, close?
Okay, so, there's always three.
The Three Amigos.
Oh.
The Three Musketeers. The three.
Who's number? Number five was Donald Duck?
Donald Duck. Oh, okay. Huey, Louie, and Dewey.
Yes, Huey.
Are you serious?
Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
Are number 6, 7, and 8 at 5,858, 5,844, and 5,836.
That's asinine.
That's crazy, isn't it?
All right. Now, you got that in front of you there. Does it? How far does it go down?
It goes to 25.
Is there any villains?
So it goes to 25, and hold on, see here. Wow. Like Goofy is in here as well. Yeah. Veronica, the Thing, the Beast. Then finally, at number 60, we got Magneto.
That's like the first.
That's first villain. And then,
Magneto's been in more than, let's say, Joker.
Yep. So yeah, oddly enough, so Magneto, Doctor Doom, and Lex Luthor all beat out Joker, who is at number 96.
Wow, I figured that. Okay.
Yeah. Right. So there you all go.
Right. All right, hey, does that have, I'm just going to guess here, does it have any women on it?
Oh, that's a good question. Let me see here. Well, you know what?
Wonder Woman would be first, right, as a character.
You'd think that, but no, they've got, They've got the Archie. They've got the Archie characters. They've got Veronica and Betty at 16 and 17.
Oh, really? Yep. So they've appeared.
And number 24 is Invisible Woman.
Oh, like from Fantastic Four.
From Fantastic Four, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So there's a few women on here, but Wonder Woman is nowhere to be seen on here.
Wow.
At least
that is
on
cool.
this list.
What site is that on?
ComicVine.com.
ComicVine.com. Yeah. That is cool.
Yeah.
All right. And what did I get? Like 11 out of 12 or
yeah,
something?
Yeah,
right?
Sure. Or five.
I did really good there,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Right. Like you always do with all my quizzes.
All right.
Let's keep going here.
All right, Chris. Let's talk about I wrote a thing called this week on Comic Book Daily called Bad Investment with a question mark. And it was about big news. For big comic book stuff.
Okay.
Is Amazing Fantasy number 15 is the first appearance of Spider-Man.
Right.
Back in February of 2011, the only 9.6 out of 10 graded copy that exists sold for $1.1 million.
That's crazy.
It was the second highest price ever paid for a comic book.
Yep.
It was, you know, big, huge news. Now, the bigger news happened about a month ago when, you know, secretly and quietly, a second 9.6 appeared on the CGC census.
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden it's like the question is now, oh, my God, I just spent $1.1 million
on a comic book that was the best of.
That I thought was the best of the best.
Yeah.
The only one in existence at that grade.
And now there's two. Ooh, that sounds bad.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. That sounds really bad.
Yeah, my question to, I guess, you and the listenership is if one of these two were to go back up on auction,
yeah, but it's,
would they support another $1 million, you think? Or
I don't think they'd be half. I think what would probably happen is because the price of these comics are rising so quickly, I think they'd probably both be at $1.1 million. But if there had only been one, if that same comic had sold now or even next year, it would have been up to like $1.5 million.
Fair enough, right? Okay.
I think that they're probably still at $1.1 million, but they're not going to rise very quickly.
Right. So the guy that bought the first $1.1 million may not be in huge danger of losing half.
I don't think he's
going to
lose anything,
but he's lost the potential to make
exactly.
more
that's what
since
I think.
The second one
yes,
came
that's
out.
What
you
I
know,
saying.
I mean, that's a bold call. That's a good call. I like that call. All right. I guess the thing I wanted to say with this thing is when people are buying, there are a lot of people going into now collectible investments, old CGC graded comic books and stuff like that. And the most important thing to remember and to note is not to assume that the grade. This company, the CGC company, has a census of the grades.
Right.
So when that guy bought that 1.1 million comic, he or she saw, okay, there's one 9.6, there's four 9.4s, there's 11 9.2s, there's, you know, 37 9.0s. I guess what I'm saying is do not assume that those figures are going to stay static.
No, that's right. That's right.
And my advice would be to stay away from that upper high grade.
Well, yes and no.
Yes.
I mean,
more yes than no, Chris. Because
don't stay away from the grade, but stay away from paying the high prices for them.
You're going to have to, though, for those like the highest grades. The highest grades and the second highest grades get premiums just based on the grades.
Right.
Above and beyond based on the importance of the issue.
Okay, so do you think that somebody should still buy like a 9.2, which
absolutely
is still going to command a premium?
Absolutely. A 9.0, a 9.2, those prices are kind of realized for more so for the importance of the issue.
Right.
The 9.6, the stupid price was more realized for, hey, I've got the best
number
one.
Yeah, that's true.
So stay away from that and you're going to be safe.
Okay, fair enough.
All right.
Fair enough. All right.
All right, Chris, we blocked off a portion of the end of the show to talk about our main topic today that you and I discussed before the show, and that was comic book shops.
Yes, comic book shops in general. We talked very earlier on today, even in the mailbag question, about how can we get somebody to go into a comic book shop, and the first thing we said is what the comic shop should look like, and I think this is exactly what we need to talk about in order for comic book shops to succeed.
Yeah, I think the notion that most people have with a comic book shop, a traditional comic book shop, is, you know, an old smelly man cave,
it's
dirty, it's got comic bins, it's got things that wouldn't interest anybody except comic gweebs.
Right.
And
it's full of dusty old toys.
Yeah.
And
I guess the first thing us as an industry have to do to attract people that aren't pure comic book fans is presentation.
Absolutely.
Is to have a very clean store, have wide aisles, have merchandise stock, well lit, but also well merchandise stock with a breadth of merchandise. And that's the key here.
Yes.
I mean, you can have the cleanest store in the world, Chris.
Yeah.
And you can have the most well lit store in the world. But if you have dollar comics throughout your whole store,
Fair enough.
You know, you're going to have 0.0001% interest.
You're right.
So, you know, pop culture is pervasive in our society right now, and I think a comic shop keeps have to kind of, you know, have a lot of baskets, have a lot of buckets of,
so,
of
but
product.
I mean, it's going to be. Don't you think it'd be almost too expensive to start a comic shop the way we're talking about these days?
No,
I mean, really.
That's the thing, though. Hold on, back that up, though. Yes and no, but yes, because it's the only viable way to sustain a comic book shop.
Right.
So in other words, yeah, you know what? Me and my buddy, we got $800. We're going to open up a comic book shop.
Yeah.
You know? No.
Yeah, because, I mean, back in the day,
you
know, collectors used to be able to, you know, hey, you know what? I've got 40,000 comic books. I'm going to open up a store, right?
Yeah, I'm going to go over to this spot. You know, the guy wants $180 a month in rent.
Yeah,
you know, and he's like, the first, second, third, fourth, and ninth are free.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to be okay, right? You know, that kind of stuff. No, you can't do that. You have to. I'm going to still throw a stupid number out there, but let's say $100,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
If you want to be a viable pop culture comic game toy type of emporium, you know, you need to present yourself in a professional manner. One of the things we have to discuss is where do you put the store?
You
can't put it in a place that costs $180 a month to
rent.
No,
you can't. Well, nobody will go there.
So you have to go to high traffic streets and avenues, and they cost money.
I would say that maybe, you know, 20 years ago, comic book shops, really, there are so few, well, maybe 20, geez, I'm getting old. 30 years ago, comic book shops were so few and far between that they were kind of an odd destination type store.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's more of them, and they're still a destination store, but they have customers have the choice of which comic shops they want to go to. So you don't want to go to the dingy one that's costing $180 a month in rent. You're going to go to the one that's $2,000 a month in rent,
or whatever,
right?
$10,000,
or whatever it happens to be.
The one that's in the mall, the one that's in the power center,
The
one that's on the main commercial thoroughfare of that city,
right?
The one that's convenient. The one that has a beautiful sign outside. Hey, look at that place. That looks cool. You know, the one that when you walk in is well lit, but it also has, you know, Angry Bird plush dolls.
Right.
It also has, you know, a Green Lantern T-shirt.
Right.
It also has World of Warcraft toys. It also has, you know, all your little pop culture products that make a place like that worth visiting.
I think part of the problem here is that there has become a misnomer of the term comic book shop, right?
Exactly.
Because I think the way the industry has to evolve is that we have to start thinking of them as comic book shops. We have to start thinking of them as pop culture stores or some sort of, you know, I don't know, entertainment store or something like that. Rather than, because when you think of comic book shop, you think of dingy, small, area.
Right.
Whereas
we're handcuffed by that,
right?
By the what do you call that? The when people think, you know, word association,
stereotypes,
word associations. And you got to remember too that as comic book shop. Print in general is slowly declining.
Absolutely,
So any comic book shop that wants to be around again in 5 more years is just can't sell comics.
Right.
But and that's like what you said. It can't be just a comic book shop, right?
Right.
I mean, if you have a beautiful store and it has a whole bunch of products, graphic novels, comics, manga, whatever, and you know, you're selling T-shirts, you're selling toys, you're selling gaming, you're selling Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh, you know, you're not just a comic book
shop. And here's the interesting thing. I find that, you know, comic book stores, although it's, again, I don't like the term, comic book stores have this wonderful ability to be able to zero in on all the hot items of different industries, right? So they can go to chapters and they can get all the great graphic novels and all the great manga. Mm-hmm. They can go to you know, I don't mean go to, but they're going to carry all the hot toys that Toys R Us will carry.
Right.
They're going to carry all the hot video games that, you know, the EB Games is going to carry. They're going to carry a myriad of different industries, but they're going to have only the best and all the most popular things.
And you're right. And the thing that they will also do, what Toys R Us and the Walmart won't do, is they will carry the classic logo, the classic characters.
Yeah.
Your Walmarts and your Toys R Us's will carry the movie themed stuff.
Yes, yes.
So Spider-Man 3 is coming out. You know, Walmart stocks shelves deep with Spider-Man 3 stuff.
Right.
If you go to a savvy comic shop, they won't touch that stuff.
No, because right? They'll know that you can pick it up at Walmart.
Yeah. And they also know that it's a kind of a fly-by-night type of thing. It comes and it goes. It's transitory.
Yeah.
So if you have a Spidey 3 toy, you know, 3 months later, it's unsellable.
Right.
But if you have a classic Spider-Man articulated toy,
yep.
kids will want to buy that for the next 70 years.
It's a great point because you know what? Christmas is coming.
Yep.
And, you know, I went to I happened to be in Toys R Us, mm-hmm. and I was buying for my nephews and I was looking at stuff. And I thought, oh, maybe they've got a cool Iron Man figure or a Spider-Man figure. Nowhere to be found anywhere.
Right.
Nothing
right.
like that at all.
Right.
Yet your local comic book shop has all that stuff.
But for them to carry that, they have to carry the stock. So what – because these toy lines come and go.
Right.
The way it works is, Marvel Select, the toy division.
Yeah.
Will have an Iron Man a toy line.
Yes. Right? Yes.
And it's like the classic – Iron Man.
Yeah.
It's not the Robert Downey Jr. Iron Man. It's just classic Tony Stark
Iron Man. Yeah.
Iron
yep.
Man. What comic shops have to do, if they're worth their salt, is they will buy 100 or 200
of them.
Yeah,
they have to carry inventory.
And they have to keep them in their basement. They have to plan to sell them over the next 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. Now,
so, you know, you didn't get them at Toys R Us. They might be $2 more at your comic shop than if Toys R Us did have them.
Yeah.
But there's a cost to that availability. There's a cost to the comic shop keep saying, hey, I'm going to make sure that these key products are available at all times. And that's what comic shops do well.
You know, it's funny you should say that. You briefly mentioned spending $2 more on something. Years ago when I worked at a different comic book I don't work at one now, but that's how 20 years ago when I was working at a comic book store,
mm-hmm.
I remember somebody came in and they were complaining because they were selling a toy there and our price was $2 more than the Toys R Us. And so we just said, well, you know, you're more than welcome to, you know, hop on the bus, pay your $1.25 on the bus fee. You know, it's going to take an hour to get there, your $1.25 back. Like, you know, or you could just, you know, we've got everything here that you want, right? Like, you know, I know you're complaining about the price, but everything's here. So you don't have to spend the extra time,
right.
You know, and all that kind of stuff. So
perfect. Great example, too. And we're comic shops, too, going forward. So, I mean, I think you and I are agreeing going forward, comic shops have to kind of almost drop the name comic shops, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
But they also have to. They also have to kind of expand their pop culture kind of expertise.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're going to win everybody over as they are right now. They're going to win everybody over on their knowledge and their service.
Right.
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 So, you know, you go, oh, man, I'm really loving Batman. And, you know, what should I read? Right?
Exactly.
And this is where the comic shop guy comes in because Buddy behind the counter is going, man, you like Batman?
You gotta read
Long Halloween. You're gonna love it.
Oh, you love video games? You gotta read the Arkham City crossover
between
Arkham Asylum and Arkham City. You know, all that kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah. And whereas that personal interaction, that kind of advice and stuff, these are also things the comic shops have to kind of be aware of that they have to, in a big way, push as kind of this is what we represent to the customer.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And comic shops also have, while we're on the just kind of going left and right here, comic shops also have, because they buy things and they can't return them.
Right.
Whereas, you know, your chapters and stuff, if
they
it doesn't
can,
sell
they
in 6 months,
covers,
they return them back.
Yeah, yeah.
There's often a lot of dead stock at comic shops.
Right.
And smart, savvy comic shops will take that dead stock and do community outreach.
Absolutely.
They'll
do
literacy programs with their unsold comics. They'll donate to libraries. They'll donate toys to, you know, children's toy drives for Christmas and stuff like that. So there's a lot of things where a good, doesn't have to be big, but a good, strong, savvy comic shop can kind of, you know, work their way into a community.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Not only take, but give as well. And that kind of all feeds off of itself. It's a great place. It's a great social interacting place, too.
Yes, I agree.
Good comic shops also create great communities around them.
Right.
So today being Wednesday, today we expect, as the stores open here, we expect you know, that regular Wednesday crowd to come in. They're going to pick up their new books, but they're going to run into each other and say, hey, Joe, hey, Bob, well, what'd you think of that last Spidey, blah, blah, blah. And that's something that they can't get in other places. There are a lot of positives that shops have to do, but they really, going into the future, they really have to be working on all cylinders. They have to get everything right.
Yes.
And they have to have the right spot. They have to have the right size. They have to have the right product mix. They have to have great customer service. It just to have a chance to be viable.
Because
it's getting tougher
agree.
And tougher for them.
I completely agree.
Right.
Yes.
So,
absolutely.
You know, I mean, it's what, 20 years since you've been in the shop? Like since you worked at a shop? It was probably easier back then, wasn't it?
I don't know if I would say it was easier. Because remember, there's more people involved in the industry now, like more people who are interested in that stuff now. I mean, back when I worked at, you know, say the Silver Snail, like 20 years ago, you know, it was sort of a rarity to have a female comic book reader. Whereas now it's probably not a rarity, but there's certainly way more than there is now, than there used to be. Right. So, I mean, I wouldn't say it was easier because the market was just different. So it was a different type of clientele, different market. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't necessarily easy because, again, you know, they weren't in malls. They weren't in, you know, manga and graphic novels weren't in chapters, right?
So the stuff
that we were selling was still considered very fringe.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to somebody even at the time when I was working there, you know, telling them I worked at a comic book store. And they said, oh, there's an industry that's big enough that you could have a whole store devoted to it.
Right,
so it was just different, right? So
you've come a long way, baby.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure.
All right.
What do we got next here? Holiday. Oh,
Chris, you know what? We are done. Like,
oh, geez, really?
You know, we have like three more topics here, but we're out of time.
Oh, all right. Well, I guess that's it then. Okay. Well, unfortunately, that is all the time we're going to have for today.
All right. Comic Culture is produced by Anthony Falcone and engineered by Andrew Roebuck. For comments and suggestions, please visit comicbookdaily.com. Click on the podcast link. Leave your comments on the comics field at the bottom. Oh, and check us out at getthepointradio.com.
And remember, Santa's getting a little bored of milk and cookies. Why not leave him some Hostess fruit pies or at least maybe a bottle of Jack Daniels?
Yeah, baby. Hey, listen, go out and support your local comic book shop.
Thanks and have a great day.